Let's not waste the opportunity of this. Chris.
Easy question to start with. You're coming back, Christchurch's opinion of him. Presumably there's no portrait of him despite the portraits of, I think, John Charles Wesley.
Yes. I would not only rate John Wesley as below John Owen, I would rate him as a charlatan, but that's a another lecture for another time, and another booklet that I've written, in fact, called Strangely Warmed. Yes, it is, you can't see an obvious public portrait of Owen. I looked around the cathedral, couldn't find one at Christchurch, and there's nothing in the dining room. There's a great obvious portrait of Wesley. There probably is one. I heard a rumour once that they have something in a back room somewhere of Owen. But I think that just shows, you know, it's the 400th anniversary of the Prince of the Puritans, as I've called him here, the genius of English Puritanism.
Is that because Christchurch was...
They're not making him much of him. Yes, that's right. Of course, during the Civil War, Oxford was the capital of the Royalists. So that doesn't go down well. And they don't remember him fondly. Though he really ought to be remembered fondly there. One of the modern editions of his book, The Death of Death and the Death of Christ, which actually has a Latin title, which I'll test you on tomorrow. That actually, on the front cover of the book, is a picture of Christchurch, Oxford. But they're not proud of him in the way that you're proud of him, because he's on your wall. I presume that's a permanent picture, is it? I'm joking. Yeah, I think it's a shame. There may be something that I just don't know about that they have put on a great conference this year or something, but I don't think so. Are you related to the house in any way? Are you a student of the house or of Christchurch?
I taught at Brasenose, but no,
Nick.
That's David Cameron's college, isn't it? Did you teach him?
No responsibility whatsoever.
No blame is attached. Yes. Yes, he made a very firm declaration that it is, of course, by Paul. And that all the arguments against the authorship of Hebrews being by Paul are spurious, which is the majority position of all commentators on Hebrews across church history. Most modern commentators would not take that point of view. It's by anybody you like, really. Mary, Apollos, Barnabas, Mary... whoever you like. But yet, most commentators throughout church history have thought it was Paul. There are good reasons to think that. And all the reasons brought against that view, Owen deals with very effectively, I think. Though Hebrews doesn't say it's by Paul, so, you know, there's a certain amount of... But then most modern scholarship doesn't think that Ephesians is by Paul, and it says it's by Paul. So, you know, comparing it to modern scholarship is a bit weird, really. Who's next?
Mary.
Lee, I just wanted to ask you about Owen's way of dealing with opposition. Because one of the things, I haven't read him really other than skirtingly, but I was very struck by the fact that he took great care to read the views and works of those who opposed him. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think very often our tendency is to sort of do this and keep everyone
You're absolutely right. And it's a complete pain in the neck if you're doing a PhD on Owen, because I'm reading through his commentary. This is what I did my PhD on. I'm reading through his commentary and he's saying, oh, and Estius says this and Tenor says that and he says this. And I think, oh, man, I've got to go and read those guys now, or I've got to go and find the bit that he's interacting with. And on almost every page he's interacting with Grotius and the Socinians. And, you know, all these people are writing in Latin and I've got to go and find these books. He knows their works. He knows his opponents inside out. He knows exactly what they say on every verse, and he's got three answers to every thing they say. It's brilliant in that sense. So you may not always agree with every position he comes to, but it's not because he hasn't thought about it or thought about the 10 other possible interpretations, which is great.
Can I have a writer?
Of course.
It's just that today, are we seeing signs that some liberal where she ends up. Did you not get a good blog?
Yes, you're referring to earlier this week. I tweeted something about a survey that had been done amongst 3,000 evangelical people, people who self-designate as evangelicals, and the amount of theological ignorance amongst those people was astounding. The number of heresies they committed in answers to questions was shocking. You know, that the Holy Spirit, for instance, is it an impersonal force or a person? And most of the people surveyed thought it was an impersonal force, like the midichlorians in Star Wars or something. You know, there's a shocking amount of ignorance. And that many liberals on Twitter weighed in to agree with me on the things that I was saying there. So I think there is a general low level of knowledge of Christian doctrine in our churches. I wouldn't say there's ever been a golden age when everybody knew Christian doctrine. However, even, you know, if you're in 1662, say, you as an ordinary church-going person would have been baptized as a child and brought up to know the Lord's Prayer, the Ten Commandments, and the Creed. Because unless you know those things and can say what they are and give an account of your relationship to the Lord, you won't be confirmed. Most people are confirmed. So they know the Lord's Prayer, the Ten Commandments, and the Creed. Now, I'll tell you, I deal with lots of people who go to good evangelical churches who can't tell you what the Ten Commandments are. And if they can tell you eventually what they all are, they can't give them in the right order, or they don't think the order is significant. And then that's just the Ten Commandments. That's in the Bible. Whether they can tell you what the Creed is, I doubt that immensely in many cases, in evangelical churches. And we're quite positive about wanting to teach people the faith. What it's like in other churches, I couldn't begin to speculate. So there's a great deal of ignorance. One of the things that Owen did in this parish, that when he came here, he wrote catechisms to help the children and the ordinary people of the parish understand the faith. Questions and answers in simple format to teach people the basics of Christianity. And it's wonderful stuff. I mean, it's great stuff. So he's using all that great learning he's got, both at the academic, sophisticated level, and then making sure that the ordinary folks in his parish can teach and understand the Bible.
Thank you. We're going to have a catechism question tomorrow morning, actually. Yeah. Just to Tim.
What's impressive about him is that he can write in that 24 volumes of works, he can write for those different audiences. So some of the things he writes are definitely for the scholars, and some of the things are sermons. So there's two volumes in that 24 volumes which are sermons, which are for ordinary people. Well, I say ordinary, I mean in his congregation he had former major generals from Cromwell's army and some rather noble worthy people who lived in stately homes and things like that. So, you know, so he's got a range of people he can write for. Most of it's somewhere in the middle. He's writing for the ordinary literate Christian public. That's his majority audience, I would say. But there's a number of things which would be, I mean, in terms of the majority reading Christian public now, we would struggle. So I think they were just either more literate or just of a higher standard of theological education in those days. Interesting. That's one of the arguments against Paul as the author of Hebrews, isn't it? Because Hebrews is different to Paul's letters. You know, Paul writes letters and he says, Paul, an apostle of Jesus Christ at the beginning. He doesn't do that in Hebrews. Well, Hebrews is a different thing. Paul can write sermons like Hebrews and he can write epistles to Gentiles. And that's another thing. I can write one-off lectures like this, and I can also write letters to my son, and, you know, different genres of writing. Well, Owen does that a lot. He writes lots of different kinds of things to people, just as the Apostle Paul does when writing Hebrews or Ephesians.
Andy, I can understand how he fell out with Cromwell, the irresistible force machine in Rob
Ah, oh, why did he fall out with Baxter? Because Baxter's well dodgy. That's my sophisticated theological argument. Well, I suppose there are a few reasons, actually. One of them is class. That's not normally written about, but that is a thing in every English society, isn't it, throughout history? Class is a thing for us. The fact that I say class is putting many of you off already, I can tell. I am from the north, and I went to comprehensive school, so there we go.